Coming to you from Orange County, California, this is the Jug Life Podcast with Max Ada and Chad Wesley Smith. Hey everybody, Chad Wesley Smith here, bringing you another episode of the Jug Life Podcast. Joined as always by Maximus Decimus Montanius.
Hey folks.
And our special guest today, Dr. Quads. You may know him as Dr. Quinn Hennock. Quinn, you look stiff, uncomfortable. You all right?
I told you I wanted to sit next to Max.
I'm both the figurative and literal centerpiece of this operation.
Well, first of all, I just want to say it's a complete honor to be sitting next to you two guys and having a conversation face-to-face. Huge fans. I appreciate you flying me out to do this show, and it's just going to be a lot of fun.
You're welcome.
Yeah. It was no expense spared. We'll need that shirt back,
though. Quinn is right next door all the time. We share a wall with him, and he's been a long time part of Juggernaut and just an integral aspect to our operation here, both the content we create. I'm sure you've all seen his videos like Mobility Myths videos and articles, most of which have very long, cumbersome titles, but are excellent, like the Best Damn Squat Mobility Article, period, one of the most popular articles of all time on Juggernaut, Supple Leopard versus the World, and all kinds of different stuff like that. So if you haven't seen those yet, make sure go through the YouTube channel on jtsstrength.com, familiarize yourself with the works of the good doctor. But today, more than anything, we want to talk to you about your new book, Movement, Weightlifting, Movement, Assessment, and Optimization.
WMAO.
We'll just call it WMAO, I think, the rest of the time.
Okay.
Is that going to be the thing you guys are going to call it that?
WMAO.
All right. Pow, WMAO. All right, so WMAO, your first book, a real book.
Yeah.
Made of paper.
Like you. Turn the page and everything.
That's much more prestigious, I've been told, than an electronic book.
Yeah, that's what I hear. It's not real yet, so we'll wait until it gets in my hands. But, essentially it's just breaking down the snatch and the clean and jerk from, each phase and offering, I guess you'll call them corrective strategies that try to shore up any positional instabilities or create more control from the first pull of the snatch to the overhead squat to the front rack of the clean, overhead position of the jerk, and just kind of everything in between.
So, I'm sure you've been developing the information that you've been teaching in that through your clinical weightlifting certification, which is a part of your business, Clinical Athlete, clinicalathlete.com. And tell us what Clinical Athlete is, how that whole thing came about for you.
Yeah, so clinicalathlete.com is a network of healthcare providers who, I guess, just have a general understanding of athletes. So if you go on clinicalathlete.com, there's a map at the bottom of every page. All of the clinicians I've personally screened, and so they're PTs, chiropractors, athletic trainers, we have a couple physicians, and they have athletic backgrounds themselves. So it's the idea is you go to the doc and you say, well, my knee hurts when I squat, and he's going to say, oh, don't squat, it's real easy, or don't deadlift, it's bad for your back, don't lift anything over 10 pounds for the rest of your life, these types of things, and just stuff that's just totally off the wall and honestly creating a ton of problems in the healthcare system. So we created a network of healthcare professionals who are going to just be a better option for the athlete and to actually, because they are athletes themselves, be able to integrate that person back to their performance goals. So that's clinicalathlete.com. And then we have created the Clinical Athlete Weightlifting Certification course as a way to kind of take the world of the performance aspect of weightlifting and then the clinical aspect and kind of combine those two. So weightlifters who are coming off of injury, who maybe it's actually a coach's course. So essentially you're a coach looking at an athlete. Well, why are they not able to achieve, you know, the overhead squat position that I'm trying to cue them into? And, you know, the athlete's trying, and, you know, you're both butting your heads against the wall, you know, hundreds of cues and nothing's working. This course kind of takes the performance of those lifts and breaks down the movements and positions a little bit more closely so we can kind of build back up and get people in the positions that they want to be in comfortably, and then give them strategies to rehab and kind of work around injuries and still get a training effect, which I think is a big thing.
And clinical athlete, you know, the mission of clinical athlete, I think is so integral to athlete success, and was really a void that existed, because, you know, when I had my back injury, two herniated discs in summer 2013, you know, you and along with Ryan Brown were so helpful in the process of returning to hard training, and there weren't a lot of options. You know, I think I was very fortunate to know you guys already and to be surrounded by, you know, doctors who lift. But so many other people don't have that opportunity, and they're getting told, well, just stop squatting, and people on Clinical Athlete know that, you know, just stopping is not an option. So
yeah, and I mean, to your example, two herniated discs, to the extent of which they were, with the symptoms that you were feeling, you know, had you gone into an orthopedic specialist's office, like, there's a very good chance that you would have been a quote-unquote surgical candidate. There's a very good chance that you would have been told by providers that your lifting career is done. You know, you've had some of the best lifting since that injury.
My best total prior to the back injury was 2170, and since then I've done 23-25.
So there you go. Herniated discs actually improved performance.
Yeah. And in a weird roundabout way, it kind of did, because there were so many things, you know, from a breathing and bracing standpoint and positional ideas that I remember the first time that Ryan Brown talked to me about breathing and the breathing drills. And just sort of, I was healthy then. Right. So I just sort of shake my head at it. I was like, okay, this is like, you know, lame PT stuff, like, I don't need this, I'm big and strong. And then when I got hurt and had to start using that stuff for my rehab, and it's just kicking my ass, and I'm trying to do a single leg lowering drill, just shaking like a leaf in the wind, or squeezing a foam roller between my with my adductors and feeling like everything's about to cramp up, it made me take, you know, a step back or two steps back and reassess what I had done wrong, what I had taken for granted. And I mean, I tell people at seminars all the time that the most valuable thing I've learned in my own training in the last 5 years has been, you know, 90-90 breathing.
Yeah.
It seems so simple. And so, you know, when you're a big, tough powerlifter, so, like, just lame to do, but it made a huge difference.
Well, and I think it's not, you know, we're not ignoring injury. It's like, oh, your knee hurts, well, just squat more, you know, or you have back injury, oh, it doesn't matter. But it's
some dirt on it.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it's the case. Like, you know, just come down, get back in there, kid. But, you know, other times, you know, we respect injury, but to have a healthcare professional who understands the injury mechanisms but then understands how to work around your training, like, if they don't know what a squat and a deadlift are, how are they going to have a conversation with the coach to be able to modify training? How are they going to have a conversation with the coach when the athlete's back, you know, integrating back into lifting on, you know, what's safe and what's not, if they don't have that knowledge themselves? And so that's just what we've tried to build, is a network of that type of professional, and it's been great.
And, you know, speaking of docs who lift, obviously you get your balls busted all the time training here at Juggernaut with the weightlifting team, because we have people who are incredibly strong. And I've seen a few YouTube comments that are like, oh, these mobility guys never lift. But you're actually, you know, in the grand scheme of things, a pretty accomplished athlete. Tell us about your athletic history.
Well, first of all, I am a national champion powerlifter.
National champion powerlifter. How many people won the national championship that day?
That weekend? That weekend?
At that meet. It was a NASA meet, and I have a trophy, and it says national champion.
And why is the trophy not up in your office?
I actually fly back to my hometown this weekend. I'm going to get it.
It's displayed at the courthouse there.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It's on the home of Quinn Hennick powerlifting national champ when you go into Jeffersonville, Indiana. But so that's actually a true story. But I played football at a small D1AA school in Indiana called Valparaiso, and I had weightlifting experience in high school and college for football, so I always had the lifts in my background. And then after undergrad, I started to compete in the sport of weightlifting pretty much exclusively, and so that was 2011. That was actually like powerlifting, two or three powerlifting meets, and then a couple of CrossFit competitions between that.
What are your best lifts now?
My best training lifts, my best snatch is 118 kilos, and best clean and jerk is 143. That was in competition. So, you know, whatever. 70, yeah, I hit...
That's 77 body weight?
116, 142 were my best as a 77. 117, 143 were my best as like an 80.
Yeah.
Light 85.
That's good.
So when Quinn, you know, in addition to his lifting, just because obviously the people on the team are the strongest lifters in America, so Quinn gets his balls busted a lot, yes. But he's a very, very solid lifter. You also take a lot of flack about your body weight. I accidentally, yesterday, I was asking Liz if she was moving up, if she was trying to move up a weight class. And she's like, yeah, I'm trying to go to 63. And I was like, oh, you're on the Quinn Hennock diet now. And she's like, yeah, he's trying to gain weight as well. And I was like, oh, is he going to be a real 58 now? I meant to say 85. I had like a dyslexic moment. But when Quinn first moved to California, he lived on my couch for a couple months with that, and was on this amassing plan, the dirtiest of dirty bulks possible, to go from what, probably 70. How many kilos?
Yeah, it was probably 77 from the time that I moved to California, and then I was up to 87 kilos in 3 months. It was a 3 month span.
10 kilos in 3 months is a shitload.
Legit.
And simultaneously to this, I was trying to lose weight. And so Quinn comes in at daily Domino's Pizza. Domino's, you can send us a check later for that shout out. Like a daily box of Raisin Bran. What were some of your other go-tos? And
a hometown buffet.
Oh, yeah.
Here in Southern California. I've heard the hometown buffet ones from you.
Back home, it was the Golden Corral. There is a Golden Corral here. It's quite a ways up north, so the hometown buffet was my go-to, and I would sit. One day it was two mediums at Domino's, and the other day it was hometown buffet, and you know, trying to layer on top of that. And after hometown buffet, I would sit in the parking lot in my car for about 15 minutes, just trying to breathe.
Drunk on when you food eat, and grease.
Yeah, but when you eat food like that, it's a different feeling. It's like this chemical buzz. Yeah. It's not like you're full. It's not like you're uncomfortable because you're so full. It's like you've poisoned yourself.
Yeah.
And so when Hometown
Buffet
closed.
That's the tagline of Hometown Buffet.
Well, they're closed down now, so I don't have that.
So good, it's like poison.
But it worked. It worked. I got up to about 87. Yeah. My lifts didn't go up, and I lost that weight shortly after. But it was a fun experiment.
That was the other part of it. So you were trying to go up to qualify for Nationals as an 85.
Yeah.
Instead of 77, and then it was the worst circumstance ever to try and qualify that weekend, where you flew to Kentucky for Ryan's wedding.
Yeah, I was in Ryan's wedding.
So it was it bachelor party, wedding,
meet the next day.
Yeah. Oh,
I not a drop of nothing. I actually left the wedding relatively early, but it was like bachelor party, wedding. I probably got home at about 1:30, 2 a.m., and then I weighed in at 8 a.m. Trying to lift the most weight that I ever lifted in my life, and it was right. I was close.
Oh, so, really?
Yeah, missed 120 snatch, missed 150 clean and jerk. Like if had I hit my lifts, I would have qualified.
But in this whole process, so he's on this 3 month just dirty bulk, gorging himself daily and poisoning himself with hometown buffet, drunk on pizza on a daily basis to bulk for 3 months. And then failed to qualify as an 85. And I think I told you this before I left, that because I was so frustrated with Quinn getting to eat the way that he was while I was trying to lose weight, I was like, I almost hope that you don't make it. So then he was faced with the prospect of trying to cut back down to 77.
Oh, shit.
After he'd gotten to 87.
Yeah.
But
it didn't work out.
That was a good time.
Wow.
The Quinn Hennock bulking plan.
Oh, the story actually gets better because I was planning on cutting and I was doing it. And then the meet that I had qualified as a 77 the months prior, my USAW membership had been expired. Didn't know it. So I tried to qualify. I was registering, but it wouldn't let me for nationals. Registering for nationals, I was like, "What? It won't let me hit submit." So I emailed, and they were like, "Hey, you see that red line through your name? That meet didn't count." I was like, "Oh,
shit!"
So my bulk didn't matter. My cut back down didn't matter, and then I was stuck in this like medium place.
That was
basically for the rest of my life.
Multiple kicks in the balls, right there.
Not good.
Thank you to Virus International, sponsor of the Jug Life podcast. Visit virusintl.com and use Jug, J-U-G-G, for 10% off your next order. So you've been traveling the country doing the CWCs. What are some, well, I guess along with that, you've sort of been more on the forefront of this mobility boom.
Yeah.
You know, where people are becoming obsessed with mobility. So as you travel the country and do your CWC seminars with Juggernaut, what are the mistakes you're seeing people or misconceptions they're coming into it with?
Oh, there's a ton. We spoke about foam rolling for a whole episode. You know, I think the misconception of having to fix things, having to fix everything. Oh, I can't squat to depth. It must be my ankle mobility. My ankles must not move, or my hips must not have the mobility, or my shoulders. You know, my overhead squat is uncomfortable, and so it must be my shoulder joints. There must be something wrong with them. And then to spend an inordinate amount of time, you know, 20, 30 minutes a day doing passive things that have questionable mechanisms, and in months of little progress, thinking that, oh, I just need to do that more. And so it's just like this vicious cycle of people focusing on minutia, trying to make up problems and fix, quote unquote, every little thing, when what they should do is just spend more time doing the movements in the positions, probably with lighter loads that they can actually handle, and doing that over and over and over for months, because we know training is a process. And that would probably clear up most of their, what they perceive as mobility restrictions. Not to say that, you know, there's not times where we dial things back and, you know, we make corrections. But I think people spend way too much time on stuff that doesn't actually have an effect, and not nearly enough time on the actual training and just putting the work in and being okay with small progress over the course of months.
Do you think that people have, it seems to me like, and I get the questions a lot as a coach, is that people have this idea that there's like a plug and play kind of way to go about stuff, like, oh, you have this problem, there's a solution that you know, I do this thing wrong in the deadlift, put this exercise in, that problem goes away. And rather than people, like, you know, are saying, where they conceive of practice and training as the fix, you know.
Right.
It makes sense. It's like,
yeah.
It's weird to me because it seems like it's a really prevalent idea in, like, lifting and fitness. But you wouldn't, I don't think that exists in, like, if you're a kid and you're like, oh, I got to learn to throw a football, like, I should throw tennis balls. That'll teach me how to throw a football.
Right, or a weighted football.
Yeah, just kind of like, I just got to keep throwing footballs till I get better at it, you know?
I always preferred to mummify myself with a band and then try and throw a football.
Voodoo yourself into an NFL quarterback.
Hey, Timmy, take the tires off your bike, cut them up, and let's wrap them around our shoulders and stuff. Yeah, no, I remember doing that when I was a kid. Just released all my muscles.
Well, yeah. It's the same with training. You know, Max, what's the best squat program?
Yeah, what's the best this, the best that?
Yeah, there's no answer to those questions. And so that's what I try to make this book is more of a, certainly we give suggestions, like, here, try this drill. But really the suggestions are based on principles and concepts. And so if you understand just kind of underlying mechanisms of the positioning of the snatch and clean and jerk and kind of the mechanisms of movement, then you can plug and chug whatever you want. Yeah. It's one reason I love the Scientific Principles of Strength Training book so much. And one of the criticisms of that book from the public was, like, there's no programs, there's no templates, you know? And that's the point. It's not made to be a blueprint. It's made to help you create your own.
Yeah, there's an endless amount of programs, really.
That's exactly right. And so, like, the way that this book is structured, There's very simple screening protocols that maybe you can identify some things that also correlate to your training. Because, again, like, you shouldn't look for problems. Right. It's kind of like when you watch somebody, you know, raise their arm over your head, and you're like, oh, I don't think his right shoulder blade, you know, rotates 10 degrees like that one does. You know, you start, like, just making things up.
Yeah.
But maybe I test my shoulders, and this one, you know, my right shoulder stops here, and then when I'm lifting, I also feel like I can't get my right arm behind my head. Now you've got evidence to go after it. And so we have strategies to correct that or try to optimize that. But there's lots of different strategies. So you may read the book and read the principles and look at the drill, say, these drills are great, but I also like to do this drill. And I'll say, yeah, that's great, because that fits this scientific principle. And that, you see this when we talked about, you know, the principle of loaded stretching or something like that. Like, that's a great option. So when, you know, the book is not meant, like you guys are saying, it's an endless blueprint, because it's going to hopefully teach you how to create your own corrective strategies, you know, for your individual needs. And that's what, you know, there's like programming, strength and conditioning it's very simple. The yeah. basics are very simple. Then you can make little individual tweaks if necessary.
Yeah. I feel like people like to have, maybe a lot of that comes from, they need a starting point. It's like people don't grasp, like you buy a book like The Scientific Principles, and that's a very, very well explained, everything in the book is very well explained, but the knowledge and what's going on in there is really deep. There's a lot of stuff in that. And if you don't even really have any, you know, a lot of experience, you need someone to say, hey, here's like, this is, you start with this, right? Like a little, the program, the template, I guess, probably is a little more of like a, something people can wrap their minds around. Like, okay, I got to start with these like overhead squats every day and kind of work on that. Obviously that's what coaching is, right? The coach has that knowledge and has that stuff. So it's fun. I mean, I can understand where people maybe it's necessary to have something to kind of sink your teeth into at yeah. first. Yeah.
No, I think that's important. Like a starting point.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's all it is. And like you said, a coach is there to kind of guide the process. The book is laid out that way, where we talk about the positions of the lifts. You know, these are the positions. And then we define terms, you know, like, you know, proprioception, stability, motor control, all that mobility, all that stuff. And then talk about each phase of the lift as it relates to positions of the body. So, you know, top of the second pull of the snatch or the clean, we're looking at optimizing hip extension, you know, shoulder flexion for the jerk or the snatch. Overhead squat is usually integrating more motor control issues, those types of things.
Do you feel like in weightlifting, powerlifting, more so weightlifting, there's a lot of like proprietary jargon that people come up with for terms? Oh, the Superman pull, or the, you know, the Wonder Woman snatch, or the this or the that, or whatever it is.
Is the Wonder Woman snatch something that people actually say?
Wow, I just wanted to slip that one in there. Whatever they are, you know, the catapult technique, it's all proprietary language that's not scientific. It doesn't actually, it's not scientific language explaining this, that, and the other. And when you read like old like Russian Soviet texts, they explain things in angles and stuff like that because it's a universal language.
Yeah.
And so people see that and they think it's too complex and it's not. Really what it is it's a way for 20 different people to understand the information the same. It seems like mobility has an even worse scenario in that the language used to explain things is more about inciting a feeling in somebody by saying, oh, you need to release this, or that's, you know, there's scar tissue, or there's, you know what I mean? Like there's yeah. these like sort of buzzwords and inflammatory statements that get you to feel like, oh, I'm a bad person because I can't, you know, my ankle doesn't bend.
Well, mobility is not a it's not a scientific term. Yeah. So like what you just said, the old Russian texts actually defining their language, that is the blueprint. That's right. That's the foundation. Without that, you have no common language. And so that's the first chapter of the book, is defining terms that you're going to see, because that's right. You have to do that. Mobility is not a well-defined term. It's not scientific. The way that I define it is from a very simple joint sense. So if somebody lays on the table and we move their hips around through its full excursion, that's their hip potential. That's their hip mobility. Whether or not they're going to be able to move through that full excursion under load, fatigue, speed, that's another story.
Right.
Stability is another buzzword kind of on the other end, but it actually is defined, is a scientific term, as resisting perturbation.
I'm sorry, excuse me. This is a
perturbation.
What was the word?
Perturbation.
So, my parents walked on
if you
me
think about that.
Perturbation.
Yeah. It's in the literature several times in that way. I think they like that word. Yes.
That word's going to happen a lot more now.
So you have to, with stability, think of it as resisting perturbations. So external forces could be the barbell, obviously, external implements. The intrinsic forces of your own muscles, kind of fighting your own body's resistance, gravity, all these things that are acting on the positions. Could be static stability, so you're trying to hold a position against other forces. Or it could be dynamic stability. You're moving through a desired path, resisting forces that are trying to take you out of the path, like the barbell. Right. So stability is something that's defined, and it's my bias because I like things that actually have science to back them. So you'll see throughout the book, my bias is on increasing motor control, stability, motor skill acquisition, rather than just passive joint potential, you know, the mobility side of things. Yeah. And I think,
the ability to define stuff is really that. I think that's kind of funny because that's something that I've noticed is very. That's across the board of all the people, you know. I'm sure the three of us at this table, like, we're very, very specific about being able to define what you're saying, and having a very clear, distinct. This is the concept I'm explaining. This is the thing. There's definitive terms, definitive language that's used, whereas it's, you know. So much of the fitness industry, so much of the industry is just like, you know, like you're saying, it's just insane. It's just.
Particularly with the mobility, movement type of stuff, you know, I think over the last 3, going on 4 years that we've been doing a lot of seminars, I think I've done around 150 seminars. And the memory that sticks out the most is when we first become Unstoppable seminar, you were there, and there was people warming up. Before our presentations, they were foam rolling and mashing and band distracting.
Before lectures.
Before sitting down.
They probably anticipated some perturbation happening.
And, well, we were definitely perturbed. But wordplay. And then as we went on to the practical application, you know, several hours later after these people had, you know, perturbated all over the place, who were the worst movers?
Yeah.
The people that spent mindless time, you know, pulling on this and smashing that and mashing this because it was done without purpose. It was done without intent. It was done without understanding of this is the problem, so this is my... likely solution. It was the problem was so much more broad because they didn't have the tools, hadn't been equipped with the tools to begin the assessment process.
Well, don't you guys see that in just strength training also? Like, oh, I haven't hit my squat PR in 2 months. Something must be wrong. Like, let me switch my program, or I need this specialty bar, or I need this new variation. I haven't been doing enough variation. And it's the process. And in my world of rehab, so much is just irrelevant. Some of the interventions, they don't do a whole lot. And so when you look at the actual mechanism, you know, what is it doing when I hook a bend to my hip? Can you explain what it's doing? No, I can't. Nobody can.
It's releasing the muscle.
It's releasing.
Releasing.
So say it with more emphasis. And
releasing.
Oh, well, all right. Okay.
Well, the only time I've ever heard anyone say the exact same thing two times, and then the person totally got it. It's a very different scenario. being
please
stopped
tell.
Out.
Please tell.
We're sitting in the office, and it was one of the photographer guys, friend of ours, sitting here.
Well, so they're releasing the muscle.
Oh, well, there was one guy that came in, Juggernaut.
We'll call him Virus Man.
Mr. Virus was mummified in virus clothing at all times. Came in.
Jug for 10% off, by the way.
Your girlfriend, Liz, was having a conversation with him. Liz does not suffer fools well, I take it. She does not like...
She's got that Brooklyn too.
It's very like, if you're not getting it, we're done. And he was like, wearing like a biker hat that was a little... Flip little bill was super tight,
like a 50-year-old man.
Yeah, and you know he actually moved well. He was like pretty good mover, pretty good snatch and all that. And he's sitting there talking to her about foam rolling, and he's like, you know, foam rolling or massage. He's like, well, it's really good for you. I mean, it releases the muscle. And she says, well, what does release what does that mean? What does releasing the muscle mean? And he paused for a second. It releases it. And then she said, yeah, but what does release mean? And he goes, it releases the muscle. And this happened like 4 or 5 times before I thought Liz was going to stab me in the back. It was brutal.
And she also gave him a, what is a muscle?
Yeah, she gave him, what is a muscle? And I don't think he had an answer for that one. He was, it releases
the
it.
The thing that is released by the foam roller.
Yeah. Oh, it was good. Yeah, so a good example of not really just – it's one of those like a statement that just elicits the response and you're just supposed to like extrapolate what that really means. Oh, releases it. Oh release. Oh, okay, like we get out of prison. Okay, that makes sense. If your muscles are incarcerated right now and if you do not use the foam roller every day
– incarcerated in a prison of adhesions.
Do you want to be perturbated?
Perturbated? You want me to perturbate you?
Oh, my God.
No?
Okay. No, you just don't care about your own health.
Yep, there's social media there. That's pretty much how it is.
Hashtag perturbation.
How come people, don't you think, why would anybody ever have like upper trap knots if they back squat? Because wouldn't the bar release all of the adhesions?
That's, okay, well.
Actually, wouldn't you have a permanent dent? Right. Your upper trap.
I think that's one of the best examples you've ever said, you ever given of as to like why, like the foam rolling, all the manual therapy stuff, the rolling on the using a barbell. It doesn't matter what apparatus is. It's like it goes from a lacrosse ball to a 200-pound steel foam roller, and you have it's all the same because. If you're putting pressure on the muscle and it releases it, then like you're saying, if you put a 500-pound bar on your back and squatted it, wouldn't your upper back just be the most tender tissue you have, right? Yeah, that was like when you – that was one of the best things I've heard you say in terms of being able to give that as an explanation to people. Because I have – from a coaching perspective, it's the same – I can say the same thing. The people that do the most like rubber band stretching and – pre-lifting, rolling, warming, like laying on objects, putting objects on them, in them, whatever it is, those people always tend to be the consistently the worst movers and see little to no improvement over the long course. I had guys in my gym, and for 2 years they did that, the most of it, 30, 40, 50 minutes beforehand, never seeing changes or improvements. Yet I've had, and myself included, people that will walk into the gym and bend their knees one time to make sure they still bend and then start squatting. Yeah. No pain, no nothing. And, that may be an extreme example on both sides of that, but when you talk about the foam rolling stuff, like if it did something real, wouldn't that effect be lasting? And if it was this weighted object or you laying on a foam roller that was doing it, what would be the implication of having a barbell on your back, on your chest, and your hands, right?
And so this is where we make half your listeners angry and you've probably lost them because anytime you
we only had about
put down
before,
their precious...
So.
Our listeners are very well informed.
Okay.
They are.
Well, that's boring. I have several thoughts. Agree with everything you said. The way that those things are implemented, first of all, we don't understand the mechanisms of why that stuff works. It works being, you get like a short-term increase in range of motion. That's been shown. The same with static stretching. If you do a stretch, if you foam roll for 30 seconds or a minute, you can usually stretch further. You have more range of motion. It doesn't last long. It's always short-term. We don't know why it allows you to move further, and we don't know why it's short-term. What we do know is what it doesn't do is rearrange your cells, rearrange your tissue. Why would we want to do that anyway in that moment? That would be like somebody take with a scalpel and just hacking your shit. Like, why would you want your tissues to be rearranged just randomly with a foam roller? What does rearrange your cells is loading through full ranges of motion to a tolerance or to a level that is close to your capacity. So barbell training, resistance training, strength and conditioning. Duh. So the way that those things are implemented 20, 30 minutes at a time before your workout, you've lost the benefits. The benefits are all short term. You need to do them in proximity to the movement. So if you're going to use those implements, put them in between warm up sets of the barbell. Don't stick them all together as one clump and then, like, this is my mobility section of my warm up and now I'm using the barbell and here's my dynamic warm up. Start to interchange this stuff when you need it. Another point you mentioned is like just squatting for your warm up. What if, crazy scenario that I'm going to propose to you, somebody who spent 30 minutes using a foam roller, what if they took that 30 minutes and just did more of the movement that they're preparing for an extra 30 minutes with lighter loads?
And tried to do it right.
With some focus and intent. Yeah, exactly right. They would probably, this is what would happen. That first squat would feel like shit, because it always does when you walk into the gym the first time. That first knee bend always feels awful. That's when people freak out and they say, oh, I got to warm up. And for them, warm up means get on something. Right, roll around. It's like, do that, and then they'll do one more knee bend. Oh, it's all right. It's better. More foam rolling.
Yeah.
Where instead, be okay with that first squat. You're cold. Like, you're not ramped up for training. Your nervous system is not prepared. Like, you're not in the mindset. So be okay with that. Do more squats.
Yeah.
Right? Grab the bar again. Do more. I feel a very local sensation of tightness in my hip. Okay, I'll grab a foam roller, and I'll roll for 20 seconds in between my movement. Right, and then hopefully minimum effective dose, don't need those implements anymore, do more of the movement over and over and over again. Yeah. 30 minutes, that's an extreme example because I wouldn't even do it that long, but just imagine how many reps now you've gotten. So not only have you actually warmed up the pattern, you've now ingrained the positioning more, right? It's just like shooting a free throw. Steph Curry probably didn't band his wrist, and mobilize his elbow in order to
well,
for, that would, for to, yeah, yeah, well, maybe he did.
It'd be really awkward for you to be perturbating your wrist with a band on it right before you're going to play a basketball game and get caught with that. The tabloids, I mean, that could be a rough scenario.
Grind Sports Nutrition is the official supplement provider of Team Juggernaut. Designed by Renaissance Periodization, there are no-nonsense supplements to fuel your hardest training. Use JUG10 at grindsupplements.com.
I assume your book has a lot of. I hope it has a lot of pictures.
A lot of perturbation material.
It's got like 800 pictures.
The last 300 pages are just pictures. Cool pictures. This one's a landscape. It looks great.
Here's a band around your neck. Here's a compression band around your neck.
But that was one thing I just really like about your stuff is that it's practical and it's very, very practical in that it's not sitting there, you're going the same bullshit again and again. This is a way to implement real things. This is avoiding stuff. So I assume your book has a lot of that kind of, instruction in it and that kind of stuff, which to me makes a ton of sense. I mean,
it's got 800 pictures or 800 plus.
You actually know the number of pictures.
It's like a lot of pictures. But and some people would say, it's not my, I wouldn't even say it's not my stuff. It's how I interpret the science. And science tends to be very simple and basic because there's only so many things that actually work.
Yeah.
It's just like, Chad, I've heard you say it so many times, the best powerlifting program is probably the most boring.
Yeah.
Because
that's certainly very true. Sure, that is true.
Yeah. Well,
it's a powerlifting program, so it's boring to begin with.
Yeah. Well, that's true.
I wanted to throw you a bone when we were talking about weightlifting.
Yeah. You're actually one of the most accomplished powerlifters at this table.
It's true.
National champion.
Yeah. I don't know if I ever won
my trophies.
I've had a world record.
That's true. You have?
Yeah.
No longer?
No, it's probably gone after somebody else actually did a squat. That day? It was okay. That for that day. The two. I remember. Let me describe the moment. No. 2011. San Jose Fit Expo, USPA.
Oh, shit. Getting chills.
World record, 220-pound weight class, knee wraps, raw squat with wraps, I guess.
Belt?
Of course. 705.
Okay.
World record. Dan Green was there helping me. He also had done similar weights, maybe 100 pounds more, same weight class, different federation. Therein lies the secret to capturing your own world record. Just do it in a federation no one's done it in.
I digress. Do they have that in weightlifting?
Yeah, there's a couple of different federations.
AAU?
The AAU has one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they do have AAU weightlifting, don't they?
I bet you the world records in the AAU. The world record of the American Association of American Athletics.
Amateur Athletics Union.
Amateur Athletics Union of the World Record of America is probably, you probably could get that one. 120 snatch, 77, I'm guessing.
I forgot all about AAU.
Yeah. A lot of people did.
Oh, man. I think my career is revived.
Yeah. So you got that. I mean, just start a new federation. Make your own records. Fuck them. Fuck them. Doing my own thing.
Okay. I'm in.
Doctor's right. Records. Only doctor's division.
I was going to say...
Doctors only?
Forbes, south side of Forbes Road.
Oh, yeah. Physical Can you therapy. Do geographical world records? Anyways.
We digress.
Yeah.
My book is the
powerlifting is very boring because the training is boring.
And so is movement if it's based right. on... principles. Really, honestly, shit's boring when it's got science behind it because it constrains you to the things that you have that you can create hypotheses about and explain. And there's not a whole lot of things that you can do that.
But then the boring stuff sets you up for the exciting part, PRs.
PRs and winning. It's a lifestyle. It's true, though. I mean, it's like, I think it's so simple because if you want to get good at snatch and clean and jerk at some point, and for most of that time, you're going to have to do snatch and clean and jerk. Yeah. Same with squat, bench, I mean, anything. If you want to get your hamstrings, if you want to get better flexibility in your hamstring, you're going to have to do something that's probably the only thing that's effective for making your hamstring longer, right? Like, stretch yeah. it, right? Like, gymnast. I mean, like there's a few things that make that actually work, and you just got to
do those. So, you just, yeah, again, your body adapts to stressors. The stressor has to be strong enough to elicit a change. It's just like training. Movement, mobility, it follows the same guidelines. There's nothing changes there. So somebody like a gymnast, they haven't just passively stretched and then sat on the couch. They control. If you watch a gymnast, they control those positions. So they stretch to get that short-term change. This is over the course of years and years and years. They stretch, but then they actually use their muscles in those end ranges, and they control crazy amounts of forces at those end ranges. So their tissues have no choice. They're either going to snap or they're going to adapt with the loads. That's just like training. Changing your movement and mobility is exactly the same. So you don't have to be a gymnast to be a weightlifter. I think that's another misconception, is that the more passive flexibility, the better. There's been plenty of people that walk in my door who can do the splits three different ways and still overhead squat like a baby giraffe. So it's not flexibility, range of motion is not a gold standard. It's not predictive or protective of injury either. Show me that you can control it on your feet under load, speed, and fatigue. And that's really what the book is about, is utilizing variations that, let's say an overhead squat is just a little bit beyond their motor skill at the time or their motor skill acquisition in that moment. We have variations and regressions that are as specific as we can get to the positions of the lift, but that are now easy enough that they can attain, but still challenging enough to elicit an adaptation. So it doesn't mean that just because somebody can't overhead squat, now they have to go into quadruped and do 100 bird dogs or, like, you know, lay on their back and learn how to breathe for the next 3 months and do nothing. You have to do something that's hard enough to get them to actually change a behavior. In this situation, the behavior is a movement. So let's take the overhead squat, for example. If somebody, I screen people barefoot. When I first see them in person, I have no idea what their capabilities are. Say, hold this PVC, put it over your head, they're barefoot, squat down as deep as you can. You know, it's just giving me an initial snapshot. If somebody, you've probably seen this too, new person walks in the door and they can just effortlessly drop into a bottomless overhead squat. Mm-hmm. It's like, yes.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, all right, we can train now. So let's just train. Yeah. Like, why, from even my perspective, why would I need to screen further? The overhead squat, that screen showed me that the joints can get into the position. Why do we need to go further? Oh, you can't snatch 100 kilos? You're not strong enough.
Yeah.
You haven't trained your tissues for that tolerance yet. It's not because you lack the mobility. So if that is the case, my screen is done. Your joints can get into the positions. Good, done. Let's overload, let's train. Maybe in many cases that's not the case, right? Somebody stops well short of parallel. Their goal, they want to squat lower. They want, you know, you catch the weight lower. You can potentially lift more weight. So maybe that's their goal. I don't know why they can't squat below parallel. I saw them sit in that chair earlier, and their hips were, you know, past 90 degrees. So I know they go there, right? There's something else, but I don't know what it is. I can't start guessing at that point. So maybe I do. Maybe I look at ankle mobility. Maybe I test actual dorsiflexion. Maybe I lay them on their back and move their hips around and just make sure that their joints can actually go there. And if they can, then it has much less to do with actual mobility and just joint excursion, more to do with them acquiring the motor skill.
I think, yeah, to reiterate that point, seeing you assess people and having you do that stuff, you know, on video or with me or the other weightlifters, it's that process of breaking it down piece by piece to identify what is the actual root of this cause,
right?
Or, you know, what's the root of this problem? What's the cause of this problem? Not just you can't overhead squat, so let's throw an exercise for each body part at you, you know, because it could be the
or a stretch for each body part.
Yeah, it could be the lateral shoulder, it could be the hip, it could be the ankle, but let's now isolate each one of those to get a more thorough picture of the actual problem.
Yeah, and that's a big issue. You know, usually the buck stops. Oh, they can't squat to the position that they deem or they deem appropriate or they desire. It must be a, well, here's, you know, my 20 correctives. You know, there's no diving deeper. Sometimes I take a top down approach. So if somebody can't squat to any position, I don't just go passive range of motion right away. For the overhead squat, for example, I'll hike their heels up, because if their hips look restricted when they're on flat ground, but all of a sudden if they have a heel lift, they can drop into a full depth. Well, at least we've just cleared the hips, right? Their hips go into the position. They didn't just have a hip replacement. They get there, right? If there was no change in depth, heel lift or not, I still don't know. Maybe the joints really don't have that excursion, but 99 times out of 100, a heel lift helps a squat tremendously. That's why we have weightlifting shoes. Mm-hmm. And then at that point, people will say, oh, it must have been the ankle. But I've screened plenty of weightlifters who have ample ankle mobility and still benefit from a heel lift, because the heel lift provides a counterbalance. It's like a weight shift. It shifts them forward so that they can sit upright and straight down without falling on their butt. But if they have that range of motion and then a heel lift helps them, it has very little to do with mobility. And so I know that my, you know, movement correction is going to be probably just tempo overhead squats with whatever heel lift, probably more than a weightlifting shoe, maybe their shoe plus a plate, tempo overhead squats until they don't need the plate anymore, right? And then tempo overhead squats with their weightlifting shoes until they're comfortable controlling the position. Then we'll speed up the tempo. Snatch balances to add speed to that position. Obviously, a snatch balance is, you know, a shoulder strengthener as well, but it can also be somebody who's now comfortable slow overhead squatting to the depth that they desire. Like if they took a snapshot, they'd say, yeah, that's Instagram worthy. But then when they add speed, it all goes to shit again, right? Because they can't organize that position dynamically. But a snatch balance is a great variation to allow somebody to do that. Takes all of the error that could happen in the pull out of the equation. Nice teaching tool there. So that's just kind of an example of how to cluster things specific to the movements, and has very, very little to do with any trick. But unfortunately, it takes work and practice, which, like, sucks. Super tedious.
It always seems to take those things, work and practice.
Yeah.
Can't get around them. Trifecta provides pre-cooked organic food delivered right to your door weekly to help fit with your Renaissance diet, fuel your hard training, improve your recovery, and make your life easier. Visit trifectanutrition.com/juggernaut. So when is your book out? Where can people find it?
The book is officially released on May 1st. You can get it two places, catalystathletics.com. They have a books tab or a tab for their just kind of line of those things at the top of their website. And then it's on Amazon as well. So if you type in my name, I think, because it's the only thing I've ever had on Amazon. I'm pretty sure if you just type in my name on Amazon, it'll come up. Or just type in the title, Weightlifting Movement Assessment and Optimization. Wow.
Well, Mao, Weightlifting Movement Assessment and Optimization by Dr. Quinn Hennock.
Physical therapist, let's just make sure for the...
Yes,
DPT.
Not a medical doctor.
Really
doctor of physical therapy.
Getting lax with letting people know that, I feel like.
I think the reason why we call you Dr. Quinn, though, so much is because of Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman.
Yeah.
So it's not a term of respect. It's an insult.
She was fantastic.
Sully was a great character.
She saved lives.
She's totally turned into like a super MILF.
Well,
I mean, Wedding Crashers.
Yeah.
She must have been back then too, though.
I feel like she's hotter now.
Oh, she's very hot.
Jane Seymour, if you're watching. I mean, older women do love us.
That is true.
So she probably is watching.
That is true.
That the whole Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman had been kind of fading out. Like the younger kids don't know what that is, so I'd appreciate it if that would be the only reference.
If we bring
reference.
It back in. Okay. That's what I thought, too.
There are a lot of people that don't make no reference. I made a David Carradine reference the other day, and someone didn't know who he was and how he died.
Kids just don't appreciate a good autoerotic asphyxiation joke like they used to.
Disappointed in people's ability to recognize some of the references.
Hopefully,
I'm not as old as I look.
Hopefully the perturbation stuff isn't over people's head.
Well, you don't want somebody perturbating over your head. Yeah.
So they can find the book there. Where can they learn more from you?
Most of my stuff is on jtsstrength.com. So you've put together pages of the authors on the website, and so I think if you just Google Quinn Hennick Juggernaut, a page on your website with all the articles and most of the videos that I've done are there, and then your Juggernaut YouTube channel, all the mobility myths are there. I have a YouTube channel, but it's mostly just my videos that I send to my people, so it's like super low budget. But like short exercise demos, most of the exercises that I've ever prescribed, or I shouldn't say most, but a lot of them are on my YouTube channel, and then the actual explanations and taking athletes through would be some of the great productions that we've done with Juggernaut. And then Clinical Athlete can be found on social media as well with lots of great resources.
So we've got at Clinical Athlete, clinicalathlete.com, stuff on Juggernaut, at quinn.hennock.dpt on Instagram.
My Instagram, yeah.
Dr. Quinn Hennock, physical therapist.
Facebook.
On Facebook. Dr. Quinn Therapy Man.
Facebook.
All on right. TBS.
Real life.
TBS at 3 p.m. Tuesdays and Thursdays.
Of course, staring at 3.
Awesome. Yeah, like I said, it's the information you've provided through the videos, seminars, to the team here has been invaluable, and we can't thank you enough for that. So people, make sure you get out, buy movement, weightlifting movement assessment and optimization from the optimizer, Dr. Quinn Hennock. That would be your wrestling name. The optimizer.
What's my finishing move?
You wrap him in a voodoo band. And
the perturbator.
You perturbate all of them.
The optimizer clearly does the perturbator finishing move.
He's going to perturbate him. He's got him in the figure four perturbation. That's got a ring to it.
I think so. Definitely.
Yeah. You're welcome.
You can be my agent.
Max, where can they find you?
You can find me on Instagram, Max_Ada. You can find me on Facebook. Email me about the Juggernaut online coaching, online training at max@jtsstrength.com. Nailed it.
And I'm Chad Wesley Smith, at Chad Wesley Smith and at Juggernaut Training on Facebook and Instagram, filling up your news feeds all day. Forgot the sponsors, Virus International for all your tight man pants needs, Jug for 10% off, Grind Sports Nutrition, great simple supplements designed by the fine minds at Renaissance Periodization, Jug 10 for 10% off there at grindsupplements.com, Trifecta Nutrition, trifectanutrition.com/juggernaut, and then you can get great tasting food delivered right to your door, and lacrosse balls and laxatives. It's a lifestyle. This has been another episode of the Jug Life Podcast. Thank you for watching. If you enjoyed it, go give us a 5-star review on iTunes. Write us a funny review, and maybe we'll read it on the air. Go check out store.jtsstrength.com for all our fine new apparel being modeled by these gentlemen. We have sizes from slim to husky. And please subscribe to the channel. Thank you very much.
So I guess if you need to, release your bowels, that's what you'd be. That would be that one this time.